Good morning, my friends. Welcome back to the Nomad Strength Show. Today we are talking to Austin Yoakum, one of my favorite coaches I've come across in the last few months on Instagram. His Instagram is loaded with great coaching and training content, as well as an unstoppable barrage of hilarious memes. In this episode, we discuss Austin's journey in the strength and conditioning world. He was an athlete and now a coach, from initially following the traditional strength and conditioning methods to developing really his own kind of unique perspective on a lot of things. He emphasizes the importance of movement practice and problem solving and athlete-centered coaching, which I really enjoyed hearing about and appreciate. What I really enjoyed was the idea of highlighting the need for coaches to question their own beliefs in strength and conditioning, and also, you know, not take themselves too seriously. It's a profession riddled with that. This means exploring the value of trying different methodologies in training, and then having the benefits of blending a lot of these different approaches. He also shares his experience of starting a gym and sleeping on the floor of that gym for years while he was building the business. And then we wrap up by highlighting the value of creating content consistently for young coaches if you want to make it as a coach, especially in the online space. So if you want to follow Austin's socials or his online program, check the links in the show notes. I'll have them all up there for you. This episode today is sponsored by Selway Archery Products. Drew Kohlhofer and his family offer amazing craft traditional bow quivers, and they've been a huge part of the traditional archery community for years. They've hooked me up with amazing rawhide custom quiver for my recurve. It's got the Nomad Strength icon laser engraved on it. You can get your own custom one made like that, or any of the in-stock rawhide or plastic hood quivers that he's got available on the site. So go check out SelwayArcheryProducts.com. Support the companies that support the show. There's several of them, and we always appreciate any time we can send people to them to help out their business. So with that being said, let's get into the show. Back with Austin Yoakum, and I came across your page, man, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, maybe. It's been a couple of months, and it was the video, I remember this, the video that sucked me in was you calling out a baseball coach guy for doing like a bunch of just ridiculous drills with guys talking about intensity and whatnot. And so I'm like, immediately then, I'm like, all right, I like this. And I noticed that you had, I don't know if you still have it up, but you were the boogeyman of strength and conditioning. And so first of all, dude, thank you for making time. I'm pumped to get into all that with you, but I want to know why you are the boogeyman.
Oh, that was just, I was just being a pain in the ass because I'm an annoying person.
Well,
it's an Eminem calls himself the boogeyman of rap in, yep, in his like songs. And I was just listening to it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be annoying and call myself the boogeyman of strength conditioning. But I'm a huge Eminem, like OG Eminem fan.
Yes.
And that's one of my favorite rap lines of his. So I just kind of switched it up and put my own touch on it for the strength conditioning sector.
That's so funny, dude. But I, honestly, though, like a lot of the stuff that I've seen that I really like kind of not goes against a lot of mainstream, you know, CSCS, like strength and conditioning stuff. But it is oftentimes portrayed in a different way that I think a lot of people don't put messaging out for. And one of the things that I think your page is known for is just the hilarious like meme king stuff that you put out, and it's awesome. But I want to know what sort of shaped your view on strength and conditioning. How did you come up in strength and conditioning? And then like, where did you sort of peel off and decide how I'm going to make this my own?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that is funny to me is like, and I got to do a better job of communicating it, and I try my best, but it's like people see the stuff now and it's like, oh, he's just contrarian. He's just right, like being like the meme lord. And I like that part of it. And I push those buttons on purpose just to push the buttons. Right. But like, I lived the CSCS world, man, like lived it from when I was, I turned 15, it was Olympic lifts. And like, I was obsessed as soon as I started doing it. Like,
yeah,
from the get go, I started reading all the books I was supposed to read. Went to college, like passed all my classes, was a really good student in the class. Like, I was annoying because I was eating like beef and rice in my class, but yeah. Like was yeah. Passing all my classes, like never had any trouble with any of the CSCS stuff, and blue pilled myself hard, man. Mm. Like every I was super neurotic. All the stuff that I was being told mattered. I had all this information thrown at me. I was like, fuck, this is the answer. And I was so in it. I was so in the CSCS. I was so in the 3x10 model that I was lost in reality. And that's why I'm very passionate about it, because I see so many coaches and I understand this is why I go at it so much, because I understand how deep most coaches are without knowing they are that deep.
Yeah.
And the only way to get it out is have somebody that is flamboyant like me, like have you pause for just a second. Mm-hmm. In anger, you can pause in anger. You can pause in like, oh shit, he's right. Either way, I don't care, because all you need is that pause to be like, oh, why did I get angry there? There's something like maybe here. And like, there's so many examples of just like moments in my strength conditioning career where it's like, my freshman year, I tell the story. I really like the story because it's like just the pinnacle of all of it. I cleaned 350 pounds as a freshman in college, got done doing it. I look to my left and there's a senior linebacker who is doing an upright row, like 185. Like, it looks disgusting. Like, he's barely getting under, front squatting it up, getting it. And I looked around in this weight room and I'm like, I'm going to fuck everybody up. Like, I'm going to be the like God's gift. Like, I'm going to destroy. Just because we had a really good strength conditioning program in high school. I had big, broad shoulders. Like, I was just built to like move trucks, right? Like, that's what I was built to do. I look around, see all this. We go to practice literally a couple hours later.
Yeah.
And I meet that same linebacker in the hole the very first practice. He lights me the fuck up, man. Like, lights me up. He meets me in the hole, lights me up. He pats me on the head and says, you got it next time, bud. And like, I got the, you got it next time, bud, by the senior who just like put me in a different world.
Just a man.
And it was my, just a man. And just dad bod, like looking dude. And I was like, man, there is a different level to, like, it was the first time I had been red pill just a little bit. Because I was forced to be red pilled.
Yeah.
Like, I was so blue pilled that like, if I just get my clean up, I'm going to be the greatest athlete in the world. And that's what I spent all of my time doing until I was blatantly showed that it doesn't matter. And I think that is why I like talking about this stuff so much, because when you are a coach, a lot of times you are not forced to have those red pill moments. And a lot of coaches take so many steps removed from actually playing the sports and actually doing the things that would force them to have these red pill moments, to where they sit and argue about Olympic lifts and how to get them up and how to squat more and how to do these things. And like, man, go onto the field, step up to the free throw line, like go onto the court and see if anything, any of these things that you guys are arguing about matter. And most of the time they don't. And that's why I try to be very, very passionate about it and try to live that aspect and be kind of the bridge between the athlete and the coach and be like that athlete coach, which I think most of us should. I think most of us should embody the movement practices we preach much more than we talk about them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's spot on too, because one of the things I noticed even just in the last couple of months of following you guys is, and I love this, is how much actual just athletic moving around playing sport type stuff that you guys do in the gym, like what, you know, it looks like it's all, and correct me if I'm wrong, looks like that's kind of what you guys do for part of warm up type stuff, is just get out and run around and change direction and jump and throw and like do all this stuff that in so many like actual what you can consider classical strength conditioning programs, like that stuff doesn't exist in the training session. They're relegating that to just being out on the field. But it's like, if you want sport specific stuff, do change of direction, do this kind of stuff incorporated with how you train also. And that, I think people take that and it's like, okay, sport specific means ladder drills. It's like, no, it means like running and sprinting and doing
doing
athletic things, right?
I mean, it's crazy. And that's the thing too, though, is like coaches, and this is what I talk about, like one step removed. Like if I looked at my page when I was in college and blue pilled as heck, I would hate myself. I would hate myself. Yeah. Like, it's all a waste of time. And this is what so many coaches, it's all a waste of time. They're just playing, they're goofing around. And I wouldn't be able to see the stimulus being done. And this is something that I'm very passionate about, like preaching, is Stimulus is stimulus, man. Like when they're doing these sprints, just because they're smiling and they're having fun doing them, or they're getting into awkward athletic positions, they're still getting a ton of sprints done. They're still getting a ton of jumps done. They're still getting a ton of landing done. They're still getting a ton of change of direction and agility done. And so many times, like the forces and the reps and the velocities that we're getting from this stuff is way higher than what we were doing in the traditional method. So we're still getting a max output, max stimulus stuff done. It's just in a way that is a lot more athletic, a lot more organic, and makes athletes want to show up to training, which I feel like is such an important piece to training that we don't talk about, man. Yeah. It's just like we kill movement practice for athletes so often. One of the badges of honor that I see, and it's so gross to me, in strength conditioning in the college sector specifically, it's like athletes on a football team will go up to strength coaches all the time and they'll be like, man, coach, as soon as I'm done with this, I'm never lifting again. Like, I'm never doing legs again. You're like, man, I'm like, and that's a badge of honor in the strength conditioning. It's like, yeah, my workouts are fucking hard, dude. Like, yeah, and they smile and dap it up. I'm like, bro, that your one job is movement practice.
Yep.
And they are telling you they hate it so much that when they are done with you, they will never do it again. That's insane. That's insanity. And we wear that as a badge of honor rather than just a massive red flag to, wow, our sessions suck, man. Like, we should change this up. So many athletes we have, they'll graduate, like, we're at a point where we're 7 years into this now, six-ish years into it now, to where we've had athletes for 4 years, they've graduated, and they still have trained with us 2+ years after, strictly because they enjoy the movement session. They're not even training it for anything more. Like, and that, to me, that's a sign of, okay, we're doing something right here, because it's about the longevity of that athlete's career and their life, man. It's the 40 years, not the 4 week program that you got them on.
So when did that change? You know, you mentioned that moment as a freshman, like what was the process of you kind of becoming this version of yourself now in how you think about training? Cause you mentioned, like, it was, I want to build up my clean so I can, that's the metric that's going to make me the most successful. Right. And that was maybe the first instance, but what were some of those other things along the way that helped kind of shape how you thought about this from an athlete perspective too, then how that transitions into you as a coach?
Yeah, there were so many moments like that. So many moments. It was like, as soon as I had that red pill moment with the cleans, I was like, oh fuck, cleans don't matter. But what I couldn't see is like,
then you go off the other end, completely off the other end. Nothing matters.
Exactly. Like, it went to DeFranco, and DeFranco is all that matters. And I was doing like Conchi. And again, it was a much better training program than what I was doing. I'm not shitting on DeFranco's at all. But I'm more so talking about my inability, and so many strength coaches' inability, to just one step remove. It's like just changing out. It's not cleans, it's DeFranco's. And then from DeFranco's, I went to triphasic, and then like all these things, and just so many moments where it's like I would run the thing forever and get good results. It wasn't like I got zero results. It wasn't like I never made any progress, but it was always, I would go on the field and it was like, man, I see the game way slower than my counterpart, who I know I'm stronger than, who I know I train harder than, who I know all these things, like I know more than him, all these things, but I'm watching him do things I'm unable to do, or I'm unconfident doing, and you know, so I'm missing out on movement options. What's this? So it's just a lot of data points just teasing me over and over again. It's like, what is happening there? And then I started the podcast and I had all these strength coaches come on that are like the smartest coaches in the world.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and all of my heroes, like my heroes in the strength conditioning field. And every single one came on and basically the general message was, I don't really know, man. I don't have the answer. Like that was the general underlying message of every smart person I brought on. There were some narcissists that came on and you're like, okay, but you could tell, like, you're talking to them like, oh, okay, there's something else here. You're trying to push something else here. But the people that I really had a great conversation with that had no business talking to me at that time, they all told me they didn't have the answer. And I'm like, man, if they don't have the answer, who's this fucking like NSCA organization promising they have the answer? And then it's like some things like with injury prevention. It's like, well, we preach all this injury prevention stuff and all of our athletes are still getting injured. Like, what's happening there? And we're preaching all this like game speed stuff and none of our athletes are getting faster in a game. Like, okay. And it just took so many of those moments to get to a point like, oh, I need to go one step back. I'm still looking. I'm still losing the forest for the trees. I'm still looking at singular individual methods and singular individual, like, exercises and methods, and that's right. what I'm missing, where it's like the overarching philosophy is what I needed to change. And once I got to that point, it's like, okay, this is what I need to see: stimulus for stimulus, movement for movement. I need to create solvers of movement problems, not just outputs, right? And I think a lot of times as coaches, one of the things we do too, it's like, it feels really good to have an Excel sheet showing we made progress.
Right.
It's really, really hard to show objectively that we made a better solver of movement problems. It's tough to do that if you're looking at the micro 4-week program, the micro 12-week program. What's really easy to do is look at a 12-week program and look, I got their vertical higher. I got them sprinting fast, whatever it is. It's like, okay, but do they move better? Are they closer to their goals than they were before? And if they're just like a freak and they just want to like go dunk, that's a different piece. But
right.
they're trying to be an athlete, or they're just trying to move better, or they're trying to feel, but whatever it is for them. But I wasn't looking at that. And I think a lot of coaches don't. It's much easier to look at a 12-week program and be like, look at all this progress I made, especially in the college sector, where it's like, that's all strength coaches or all admin and sport coaches care about, is these Excel sheets you bring them
right.
that show them, hey, you should keep me, you shouldn't fire me because look at all my progress I made, right?
Yep.
So like that's why I think a lot of coaches get lost in why you're actually doing it. We say we're doing it for the athlete, but really we're doing it for our paycheck. And I think if we can take one step back and admit that and look at things from a different perspective, things change a lot, and you can have a much better relationship with your athletes and their movement practice and still get the results. That's the thing. I don't want to sound like the movement yogi where none of the jumping matters, none
right.
of the sprinting matters. You still get that. Like that's the best part. It's not, you don't throw that out with the bathwater, but you still get all these good pieces. Now you're just creating it in a much more organic way that's actually getting them closer to their goal.
So who were some of those, because I had this very similar type of experience, like came from the sports performance thing. It was all sports specific or sports performance based programming, right? Like I did the college sports thing as well. So that was the world I lived in. When I got out, I was like, oh, this shiny CrossFit thing over here is similar-ish, but it's different. I'm going to go try this. And then you just, every coach I speak to has some sort of, I guess I can't say every, because some guys just stay pigeonholed in the same thing for their whole lives. But a lot go through this peaks and valley thing of trying every single methodology or practice under the sun on complete opposite ends of the training spectrum. So it's like, I did sports performance, I went to CrossFit, I got narrowed down farther into Olympic lifting, and it's like, I'm going to forego the barbell altogether, and I'm not going to do anything other than kettlebells for 2 years. Right. And it's like, and then I go straight, I go RKC strong first stuff. And then it's like, you realize all of these things sort of over time meld together. And that's kind of how you end up creating. It's like the Bruce Lee Jeet Kune Do, like take what works, get rid of what doesn't, and kind of create your own thing, which it seems like that's kind of the similar path that you took, like doing all of these things, recognizing these things that were missing from traditional strength conditioning. So for me, through all that, I had like a couple of people that I can kind of point to and were like, these are really influential people that brought in a different perspective that I wasn't aware of in the coaching space, or even maybe outside of fitness a little bit too. Like, did you have any of those people that when you're kind of transitioning through this, you're like, they brought a way of thinking into this that I had not considered before? All right, everybody, you guys know that I'm a coffee guy, so I got to take a minute here and tell you about Steady Grounds Coffee Company. As a micro roaster, they are all about quality and freshness. They craft unique blends, and they're roasting everything to order, which is crazy. If you're a fan of the big, rich, and bold flavor, or more subtle and nuanced, Steady Grounds, Georgian C.T. Adams, out of Madison, Mississippi, they've got you covered. For their blends, Steady Grounds meticulously selects and combines high-quality beans to create these really unique and flavorful profiles. The blend development process involves testing, experimentation, which is what we did with the Nomad Dark Roast, which I'm really excited for you guys to try if you haven't gotten a bag yet. They roast every bag made to order, which allows them to tailor the roast level to the customer's preference, and it maintains peak freshness. This is so when you get your bag, it is absolutely as fresh as it can be, and you can enjoy the full spectrum of flavor in every cup. I'm telling you, it is the real deal. So go to Steady Grounds Coffee Co. nomaddarkroast.com. Get whatever bag you want, but if you want to get the Nomad Dark Roast, obviously that's my favorite one, but you can use the code NOMAD15 at checkout for 15% discount on your entire order. So go to steadygroundscoffeeco.com and get your hands on a cup of amazing, exceptional coffee.
Oh, 100%. And first off, I think that journey needs to happen. That's another thing I've been talking to Jake. Do you know who Jake Torres is?
I don't know if I do.
Okay, he's a legend. Yeah, okay. You can just Jake on. Jake's the freaking man. Okay. But Jake and I were talking. We're pretty good buds, and we were talking on a podcast. We're like, now the kind of edgy thing to do is just reject everything. Like, because Jake and I talk, and Will does it too. It's just like, it's kind of like taking that step back. It's everything you and I are talking about, like taking the step back, kind of blending everything. But you can't blend everything up if you don't know everything, if you don't experience everything. And that's kind of the thing with the young strength coach. I'm 27, so I get like I'm young for a lot of strength coaches. But now there's this wave of like 21 to like 25 year olds that kind of look up to Jake and look up to me, look up to Will. And but they're trying to skip a step. And this is one of the dangers of skipping that step is you can't really just throw out everything. You actually have to go try it. And I really believe there is a time frame. This is one of the things I tell. We do a lot of consulting with younger strength coaches. And it's like biggest thing I tell them is go pursue something to the maximum. Go drink the freaking Kool-Aid. Yeah. Just don't get stuck drinking the Kool-Aid. Yeah. That's the biggest thing. Don't get stuck drinking the Kool-Aid. But I want you to go drink that, especially from 18 to like 25, because you need to. You need to go be an idiot. You need to go drink the Kool-Aid. You need to go believe in something crazy, like knees over, even if it is knees over toes, whatever it is for you, like go believe in something hardcore. Get the information and then get that red pill moment, because it's going to help you so much more than right now, where it's like reject everything at the front end, because that's what their heroes are doing, right? Like that's what the people they look up to, which is Jake, Will, and I right now, and a bunch of other people, Angus, bunch of people in that kind of category Angus. That do that. It's the same thing we did when we were growing up, where like I looked up to Cal Dietz and he was doing triphasic, so I just did triphasic, right?
Right.
There was really no thought process behind it, where they're doing the same. They're rejecting because the person they look up to rejects. But I really believe there's power in drinking the Kool-Aid and going through the Kool-Aid, but not falling for the Kool-Aid. Anyways, that's a long way to get to. I've had a lot of people in my life.
Yeah.
Stu Bourne, though, was probably the number one, and he's not very well known in the strength conditioning world, and he should be, but he doesn't post anything on social media. He's like an athletic trainer and strength coach. He was the head strength coach when I was at St. Thomas of all the other sports. Only sport I had was football. And I would just talk about some bullshit, man. I would talk about like you need to shove your knees out. I was doing fucking like mini band goblet squats and like walks and monster bands and hip stuff, and not anything wrong with the specific exercise, but my whole thing was like I'm doing it for injury prevention.
Right.
We were doing landing mechanics. We were doing snap downs. We were doing perfect movement. And I would do this, and he did the best job in the world of not stepping on my toes, because if somebody just yells at me and tells me to do it, I'm the type to like, fuck you, you're wrong. Like that's gonna be my mentality. Like I'm just stubborn like that. He just did the best job in the world of just like sending me stuff. Like he'd be like, well, I kind of like what you're doing, and the guys are super interested, but like what about like Allen Iverson, like look at the crossover position he's like, look at his knees here, like look at how they're landing in basketball. Like he would just send me stuff like very gradually, or he'd give me a book to read and I'd read the book. I'm like, damn dude, I kind of like that, like that's pretty good, like that's pretty smart. And he gradually like red pilled me, but I spent the most time
make
with
him. You think about it office. Instead of him telling you
100%. Whereas like he was just making me think it was my idea. Or the whole time he was just way better at educating than I was at educating at the time. And I was just an idiot, like 22-year-old strength coach that had way too many responsibilities for my age and my knowledge. And he just did a beautiful job of influencing me that way. And that's why I like doing memes too, because I think it does a really nice job of like, if you can get somebody to laugh, you can let down their guard and they can look at the thing that they're laughing at and be like, oh yeah, that is kind of goofy. Like, and then they start to think their own ideas and they start to come up with this thing. But that was for sure the number one influence is Stu Bourne, and a really good mentor of mine, where it was just like, he did a phenomenal job of red pilling me in a slow way to where I started to think it was my own idea of doing that, like infecting me with this virus of red pill movement. Yep. And I was like, oh yeah, I can start. And then I started to implement some of these things. And then COVID was a really big one too, because we lost the weight room.
Yep.
So I thought of all these ideas. I thought everything was great, but I never really like left my weight room or my comfort zone. So everything we did was still kind of in the weight room.
Sure.
And then COVID, I was with 122 football athletes with no weight room for, I think it was like 6 months. We were outdoors. We were doing everything. I'm like, shit, I actually have to implement some of this movement stuff now. How can I get stimulus with no weights? Like, how can I do this? Like, is it possible? And We did a bunch of depth drops. We did a bunch of like sprinting. We did a bunch of movement stuff. And when COVID let us, COVID was done and we went back into the weight room, all of our athletes were feeling better, squatting more, jumping higher, sprinting faster, moving better. I was like, oh my God, there is something here. I was like, I got data. Let's go. So that was a big piece of like that whole kind of red pill thought process is just slowly being implemented or influenced with the ideas and then actually being forced to leave my own ideas, which as shitty as the COVID period was, it was really great for my own personal development because I was forced to implement the ideas I was talking about and thinking about.
I think you said something really interesting there where if I was to maybe distill a lot of the issues in the higher end of things in strength and conditioning down to kind of maybe a single thought, it's how serious everybody takes themselves. You know what I mean? I think that becomes a very big problem, especially the higher up you get in sort of the ladder. Like not saying it's not a serious, industry or a serious job, but taking themselves that seriously kind of squashes a lot of the ability to be that sort of let loose, creative, see what works kind of thing. And you get so boxed into this rigid thing because you're taking yourself so seriously and forcing everybody else around you to like do the same thing.
Well, like this, I mean, I talk about this all the time. Like, why do people become the coach? You become a coach because you want to be the person with the answer, like deep down. Like this is why studying things like psychology is so important for coaches, because it's like, and not psychology of your athlete. This is what all coaches do. It's like, we're studying it for the, no, study yourself, man. Master yourself. Understand why you're making those decisions first. Every single person, regardless of how high up on the totem pole you are, needs to feel seen, needs to feel heard, needs to feel important, needs to feel like they provide value to their tribe, right? They need to feel that. We become coaches because we want, like, that is our solution to that problem, to feel seen and heard. Like, it puts us on a pedestal. We feel like we need to have the answers, and it makes us feel important, right? Once you admit that, you can take a step back and realize, oh, that's why I feel like I need to say this answer right away and feel like I have the answer, because then the athlete will respect me because then I have a place in this hierarchy, right? And for me, and obviously psychedelics was a big part of this too, did like really break out of that kind of whole like hierarchy kind of thought process, but leave the hierarchy, man. And it's not even like taking yourself less serious. It's just understanding, like, why are you doing these things? Mm-hmm. Why do you feel the need to have that? And then you can just be in these relationships with these athletes rather than a hierarchy of I have the answers, you have the questions. Now it's like, what can we find together for both of us? And this, like, we are all selfish people. We are all selfish, idiotic apes on this spinning earth in the middle of nowhere, right? We're in this spinning rock on earth. And we feel like we need to have this solution rather than being there and being like, oh, I am also looking for these answers. I am also looking for a place on this earth. I am also looking for all these things that my athletes are also looking for. And we can probably help each other a lot by just being real people instead of this character of ourselves that we put out there and this mask that we put on. And once you get to that point, you realize, and most of it's just an insecurity thing. It's like, well, if I don't have the answers, they won't respect me. If I don't have the answers, right, I won't have a job. And it's like, it's not true, because you went from lying about having the answers, because we don't have the answer. That's the other thing. It's just admitting we don't have that answer. You cannot prevent 100% of injuries. You cannot make every single one of your athletes an Olympian. If you could, then I would say you have the answers, right? But we don't. We have freak injuries all the time. You have athletes that don't reach their goals all the time. And this is in every single level, right? So we're still looking for the truth. We're still looking for the answers. It's not something like code where it's like, okay, you need to do it this way for the code to work. You know, it's like, we don't have that code yet. And I don't think we'll ever get there with the complex system that is the human body. And we pretend like we do. Like that's the most frustrating part. Like, we bring all of this complex world into our systems of a box, right? And we need to understand and make simplify things and just like not have to worry about everything at all moments. Thinking Fast and Slow is a great book to understand how our brain processes things. We want to simplify everything, because otherwise I'm going to look at my lamp on my desk and think all day long like the intrinsic details of the lamp rather than just like, oh, it's just a lamp. It's just there. Right. And I need to focus on this conversation, you know, the important things. But we bring all this complexity of life into a system to simplify it, so we don't have to spend 100% of our emotional energy all day in this. And we need to have an understanding. But then We never leave back out into real life. We never come back out into reality. So these systems should help us understand reality and simplify, but then we come back out into reality, see if they work. Most of the time we bring these systems into a the real life, into this box, and we stay there. And then we create systems that are based off systems that are based off systems. And then yeah. we're really, really stuck in a fairy tale land of things like Goda and like knees over toes, where we can't escape them because we have trapped ourselves in our own fairy tales, in our own lies. So I think once you get out of that box, you're like, it feels like you're taking it less serious, but honestly, you're being much more truthful and you're getting much closer to where you need to get to, rather than pretending that you are safe with all the solutions that you have with the weekend cert that you got.
I love that, because one of the things I can point to for myself anyways, and I'm not sure if you follow him or aware of him, but I a couple years ago I was coached by James Fuller, who runs Strongman Archaeology on Instagram, and just brilliant training mind, right? But all he does is look at these movements that are decades and even a century old that no one does anymore. And he's ridiculously strong. Like he's in his mid-50s ish or something like that. But the way he thinks about movement comes from the problems you have to solve doing all these old movements, which the way that they were developed was because there wasn't like a rack that you had to, like you had. So he's like, if you have to do a barbell squat, you have to figure out how to get the barbell from the ground to your back to do a back squat, right? There's no racks in 1902. So he's like, all the, you know, where you hike it up on the low back, you pop it up, you know, Jefferson style, or you do like a hack lift or any of these, all kinds of things. And so I went through this program where that's all that we did, was these types of movements. And it was amazing because I was training for my first jiu-jitsu tournament. So there was a lot of carryover and grappling to all these different rotational strength through all these end ranges with, you know, limbs out extended, all these kind of things. But mentally, I'm thinking about things as I'm doing this movement, because I'm going through all of these new movements, developing a new skill. And I'm having these moments where I'm doing these training exercises and I'm like, I have never considered training like a academic event while I'm doing it. You know, like and you mentioned the phrase like problem solving earlier, like you're having your athletes solve movement problems while you're doing them. And that was like the first thing I can point to where I was consciously trying to solve a problem as I'm doing this movement, which is like, you nailed it with all of these things that are actually preparing the athlete for the event. Like you're making them solve problems. And you mentioned even like landing mechanics and all the stuff that we can get so narrowed down and boxed in on, and like making sure you have to land perfectly, both feet at the same time, like knees have to track exactly. It's like, or just land and figure it out and see what feels good. And like, you'll adjust on your own, you know, and figure out that problem.
Yeah, 100%. And that's one of the things, like the movement literacy and the ability, it's the same as reading. Like yeah. You want to become a really good reader, you're going to read a bunch of books, right? You're going to go through the process, and you're going to have some foundational piece of like knowing the alphabet. But once you know your alphabet, bro, you're not continuing to go through, like, I can't remember the last time I recited my alphabet, bro, because right. I know my alphabet. Right. Like, I've landed. Okay, now that I landed, I know my ABCs. I'm going to go do parkour. I'm going to go read Nietzsche, bro. I'm going to go read Harry Potter. I'm going to go read all of these other things to work on that literacy, in like actual literacy.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go movement literacy, and it's the same exact thing. You know your ABCs and you've known them for a long time. You know how to squat, you know how to deadlift, you know how to pick things up. Now, how can we challenge these things? How can we yeah. challenge the ability? How can we read Nietzsche in the weight room, right? How can we spice some of this stuff up? And that movement intelligence is a massive piece of being a good athlete. Great athletes figure things out very, very quickly. And athletes can get better at learning skill. Learning, the ability to learn a skill is a skill in and of itself. Yeah. And I have seen it happen so many times. And we miss that KPI with athletes. How can we make them better solvers of movement problems? Not the movement problems specifically,
right.
but just general solvers of movement problems.
Figure it out.
How can they figure it out? How can they get better at solving strength movement problems? By implementing some things like old-time strength methods, where we're zertering, we're doing some Jefferson, we're doing all this, like we're strong in a lot of positions. Mm-hmm. Can you figure out how to use your body to produce force in a multitude of different ways? Can you do that? Can you do the same with jumps? Can you do the same with sprints? Can you do the same in agility type movement problems? And I really believe there is a big piece there to mastering and practicing the ability to read different books of movement on the field, in the yeah. weight room.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I want to take that and I want to kind of shift directions a little bit and go a little bit more into the kind of the business side of things. As you started this, because I watched a video that you were talking about in the early days of the gym, I think, when you were living on the floor in the gym. And I want to hear that story on how the actual gym that you have, how that got started and a lot of the challenges and stuff that you faced getting the thing going. Because starting a gym is like starting a restaurant in terms of, you know, success ratings for people and in the business world. Yeah. Like restaurants and gyms are like super high fail rates. So like, how did you like talk me through that journey of how the gym came to be?
Yeah, I was a strength coach at the college sector to start, and I swore that was my goal. Like, yeah. I was like, I'm going to climb the ladder. I'm going to continue to do these things. And I got jobs that I had no business getting. My first job out of college was I was an assistant Division III strength coach at St. Olaf College, and I had responsibilities there that I really probably shouldn't have had again. And I worked 1 year there, or like half a year, like a whole football season there. And then I got offered the job at my alma mater, which was St. Thomas, and it was the head football strength coach for the whole football team. Like at 22, I probably just turned 22 years old.
Yeah.
And then we transitioned from a division, and that, so St. Olaf was a bad like Division III college. Sorry if any goalies are listening, but we weren't very good. Like the St. Thomas team when I was a senior beat that team 98-0. Like just to put put it on spectrum. Like it was a 100-point swing. So
what division?
St.
Thomas?
They were Division III, but high level Division III. So like they were competing for national championships. They were going to semi-quarterfinals, everything like that. And then we transferred. We got kicked out of our conference and Division III pretty much because we beat that team 98-0. So then we got kicked out and we became a Division I college. Anyways, I was climbing this whole like ladder. I was a Division I strength coach by 24 years old doing all this. Yeah. And I was just like, this is not the answer, man. Like the pay is not there. You are always answering to somebody else. You are always doing things that you really like you don't believe in at all moments. And Jake and Will were really good influences on me. Like, they're like, dude, like, start building up your gym. Like, start having a secondary source. And reading guys like Tim Ferriss, too, and just, like, different, like, business minds where it's like, okay, you need leverage. Like, you need some ability to have leverage. So I started up the gym when I was at St. Thomas my first year. And like you said, if I didn't have St. Thomas, I would have went out of business instantly. Like, if I didn't have – and St. Thomas wasn't paying a ton. Like, it was paying, like, $10,000 a year. So it was not a lot. Like, but it was something to keep the doors open. And my rent at the time was $400, $450, I think it was, the first year for the gym. So it was $450 to have this, like, closet, man. Like, we had two racks that we built. Like, we welded together and did everything like that. I got all my equipment off Facebook Marketplace.
Nice.
And all I needed was $450 a month to keep the gym open.
Yep.
And so there's like $200 a month to train like athletes in person. I just needed three athletes to keep the doors open. I got three athletes. I was set, and I was putting all of my money from St. Thomas into the gym itself. But I was also living at the gym and sleeping on the floor and doing all that. So I didn't have any other expenses. And it was a really beautiful time, honestly, for me. It sucked in the moment, but I learned so much about like myself and about the gym and like literally living, breathing and sleeping in everything that I was talking about to make it. But there's also just a part of it where I just had like an ignorant self-belief in what I was doing. And Nietzsche talked about that too, is like when you're on the path, when you are doing the thing that you want to do, like there is no question. There's not a motivation. There's just something there. And he talks about trusting the gut, trusting the intuition, and how modern society, and this was modern society for him, trains you to not trust your intuition, trains you to like do things that you know are not necessarily right. And then after 10 years of doing that, you don't have this voice within you that you trust anymore because you have told it no repeatedly over and over again. So it dulls itself, right? And I just haven't had a background like that. I've always had the thing where I feel something, I'm like, I got to go act on that. Like, well, why do I feel that? I'm not sure. Why do I have this belief in this? I have no idea, but I do. So I'm going to go do it. And I started acting on that belief and just continually followed that voice throughout. And there were so many moments where it was like, it makes no sense to continue to do this. It makes no sense to continue to post on Instagram. It makes no sense to like what are you doing? Like business-wise, it doesn't make any sense to keep doing these things. But I had a voice in me, continue to do it. And there was just a click. There was moments. Yep. And I'm like, oh, this is it. And then everything kind of took off from there. But yeah, there was a 4-year period where we were sleeping at the gym and making – $400 dollars a month that did not go to just straight rent, and that was just rent for the gym. Right. That was the only money that I had. I had like $200 a month trying to buy food and gas and everything like that.
That's amazing, because I think that's the classic like entrepreneurial mindset of probably two or three times a week, it seems. I joke about it, you know, half-heartedly, I guess, but I'll have moments where I just want to throw the computer, the mic, like with all my coaching stuff on it, just send it careening off a cliff into the sea and like go get a job at like a supermarket. Just be like, take this away. Like, this will be easier if I go do this over here. But then that usually fades. And it's like, that actually brings about the times where some of the best creative moments happen that translate into things that actually help the business, you know? And so I think everybody that is an operator of a business in some capacity deals with that probably even more frequently than I do. The higher level, the bigger the business gets. So it's I think something that people shy away from starting stuff because they think it's just going to be, once I get this going, it's going to be great. And it'll consistently grow up, right? It'll be a linear line that has a light, nice little elevation every single day. It's like, nope, it's actually like you'll have really great days and then days that you want to quit everything. And everybody that has a business has those moments.
And that's the thing too. It's like, you don't want, like, we all think we want it to be easy. We right. want it to be smooth. We do not, right. man. Like, Nietzsche talks about this in his book. Jordan Peterson talks about like carrying your cross when it's there to bear. Like, that is what we thrive off yeah. of. That is when we are the most happy, is when we are working the hardest for something we believe in.
Yep.
And when we're probably eating the most dirt, like we're doing that. That is when we're the most happy, because we understand we are doing something. We are fulfilling something that we are put here to do. And I think a lot of people just misconstrue. They're like, oh man, this sucks. This is hard. Yeah. And it is, but it is not better when things are better. It yeah. is like you just got to learn to enjoy that part of it and understand that it is part of the journey, and it is not failure. It is not, you need to go do something easier. I promise 99.99% of people are not going to be happier doing something easier,
right.
doing something that is a cleaner path. You're not, you're going to like have more external instant results, but your internal is going to be like, dude, we had a straight up message from whatever the universe, whatever you believe in, to go do the thing that you were doing.
Yeah.
And now you're not doing that anymore. And now you got to sit with that. And a lot of people sit with that, and it's just, you numb that, like you numb it over and over again. So you don't have to listen to it. But I promise, man, the easy days are not worth it. And that's why, like, even right now, like when the gym is at the highest moments it is at, it's like, I got to go find a new challenge
yeah.
because it's almost like it's too easy. It's like, it's not fulfilling. Yeah. It's not the thing. And that's not even like an ego. It's not like our gym has reached ridiculous levels of success. It's not even at that. It's just so much easier than sleeping on the gym floor. Right. right? You know, like
yeah.
it's easier than that, but it's less fulfilling because you're not doing that. You have less of a direction. It's like, okay, what's the next thing I have to do to go sleep on the gym floor? Like, and that's what I'm searching for continually.
And not only that, but you, and I've heard this put a different way, and I'll tell you the analogy. I've said it, I think, on this show a handful of times, but you'll probably look back on those times of when you're on the gym floor as like the best times that you had, you know what I mean? And the analogy was, I'm out west, I'm a hunter. So I listen to a lot of like hunting podcasts, right. And everything. And Stephen Rinello, who runs Meat Eater, has a great story that he was telling about, you know, when he went on a trip to Disneyland with his kids. He's like, or he's like, when you remember going back to like an amusement park, and in the moment you think like this roller coaster is the greatest thing ever. It's the peak of happiness while you're on this roller coaster. He's like, in 20 years, you won't even remember the feeling of being on that roller coaster. But he's like, but I can tell you that the times when we were hunting in the backcountry, we're 10 miles away from anybody, it's snowing, our feet are soaked, we're miserable, we're cussing each other out, and we get back and we'll look back on those as like the most fun times we ever had. Like those times where you're absolutely miserable and suffering through something is the times you look back on and you're like, that was actually amazing. That I remember that so vividly. It was so great. And you don't actually remember the things that you think in the moment are like peak, because it's so fleeting. It's just like a kind of a superficial happiness almost.
Oh yeah. And we all especially like young men, like crave that hero's journey.
Yeah.
And everything in our society tries to take away those hero's journeys and tells you the hero journey is wrong and tells you to like grow up and tells you to go get like, you know, like tells you so much bad advice.
Yeah.
And this is the crazy thing too. It's like, where is this advice coming from? It's coming from people that are not super happy in their spot. You know, like this is crazy. And there are other humans too that are just making mistakes in the same way that you are making mistakes. And I think that's a big part of, again, the podcast was super helpful for me, but just like a lot of people don't have exposure to super high level thinkers and having a conversation with them and realizing like, oh, they're flawed just like you and me. They are confused just like you and me. They're looking for the answer just like you and me in their personal lives, in their business life, in their training mindset, right? And if you can't see, and I say this because I struggled with this, I had a very bad, I always looked for authority because it's nice to have an authority. Yeah. It's nice to have that answer, right? Again, it simplifies things for you. But once you realize like, oh, all of your heroes are just other people with you. They are not Superman. Then you really start to open up like, oh, doesn't matter how successful that person is. Like when they're giving you advice as another human that is flawed and messed up and doesn't have all the answers. And you can take that advice and run with it. And it could be great advice, but it could also be terrible advice, regardless of how successful they are, regardless of like how well-meaning. I don't think most people get bad advice with ill intent.
Sure.
It's just like they actually think that, but they're wrong and they're objectively wrong, or they're just wrong in this situation towards you. And if you don't realize that quickly, you get stuck in a lot of bad pathways. You're like, well, my parents, my mentor, my coach, everybody told me to do this thing, but I feel something. You're like, yeah, you feel something wrong because it is wrong. Again, when you feel something wrong, you need to trust that gut feeling. You need to trust that intuition within you and realize those people meant well, but they are not right in my situation. Maybe they're not right at all, but you don't even have to put that on them. Just put it, they're not right in your situation, and you need to go pursue the thing that you feel like is right, or just pursue something else to see if that is right. And that's the journey of drinking the Kool-Aid for training methods, right? That's for business, anything like that. But drink the Kool-Aid, like go try something else. Stop sitting there with the one person told me this, so I need to go do that answer.
And you can actually take that in another direction of, maybe you need to be able to separate the person from sometimes the things that they say as advice goes, because you're like, this one little thing actually is very helpful and this can be very good, but maybe like 80% of the other stuff they say doesn't apply or is straight up bananas, right? But like, this actually is helpful and applicable to me right now, but that doesn't mean I'm all for whatever this person says over here. They just had like one good point that I'm like, that actually is a good point. I can use that over here for this thing, and not be the person that's, if I agree with this person on one thing, now that means I'm listening to them on everything.
Bro, and even on that point too, it's like, when did you get that advice from the person? Like, I give really freaking good advice when I take a 1 milligram piece of nicotine gum, I have caffeine in my system, and I'm microdosed up, and I'm the best advice giver ever. You catch me on a bad day of sleep and no caffeine, and I talk to you and I give you advice, it's probably the worst advice in the world. So, and that's the same person even, you know? So it's like, when were you getting in this advice? What were they going through? What kind of mood were they in? That type of stuff too. So it's just, I think that's a big piece. And again, like you said, once you get to that point, you can listen to people. It's not, you don't throw everything out everybody ever tells you. That's just stupid. Yeah. Like, there are people that can give you really good advice, but if it doesn't feel right, again, just listen to the advice, write it down, sit with that advice, and then take the good pieces like you were talking about and throw away the stuff that you don't value in that moment. And that doesn't mean that the advice is wrong for the eternity of time too. Maybe like there's so many times where a coach has told me advice that was bad for me in that moment.
Right.
And now I look back on it, it's like, oh, that's good advice for where I'm at currently with my business, where I'm at in my training, currently where I'm at as an athlete. But, and that's something we have to realize as coaches too. It's like, the best example of that is like 40-year-old plus coaches telling young athletes they need to train like 40-year-olds. No, dude. You need to train like a 40-year-old because you are 40 and you don't feel good and you had all of this and you already had your athletic success. That athlete does not need to train like you, and they are not getting anything from the way that you're preaching movement. And I understand why you view movement that way, but you are not in the same stage that they are at.
Exactly.
And that's just a simple training like way to tie all of that up. It's like, man, realize when and where that advice is coming from.
And the other way around too, like the 22-year-old who's coaching that is trying to tell the 30-something-year-old dad with two kids under five, like myself, it's like you need to be up at 5:30, follow this morning routine, and like get your hour. Like it's like, dude, you don't get it at all. Like,
I got 3 hours of sleep last night with a screaming baby.
That is the last thing that's happening today. Yeah, so funny, man. So with the gym, you've got the in person thing, and then you also do some online stuff as well. How has that transition been? Because when I went from being in like the boutique gym, you know, bringing in people to do small group class, that kind of stuff, and then went into online, I was like, oh, this will transition, you know, fairly well, without realizing when I did, it's like, dude, this is an entirely separate business and a separate business model altogether. So did you kind of feel that same thing as you guys added in the online stuff as well?
Yeah. So honestly, we started our online stuff first.
Oh, there you go. Went the other way.
And I swore it off for the longest time. I swore it off. I'm like, I'm never going to do that again. I wanted to be the Division One strength coach. Yeah. And everybody else. This is a good piece of bad advice I was given. It's like, people will laugh at you if you're an online trainer. You'll never make it in the strength conditioning world if you're an online trainer. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, dude, like, fuck those guys. Like, that's all. It's all bullshit. Like, yeah. Why am I doing that? Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And then I was training guys in the summer. I got the job at St. Olaf, moved. And those guys in the summer were like, dude, I still need a program. Like, you're not here anymore. Could you give me something? Mm. And I was like, fuck, yeah, like, I got you. And I started doing it. And, like, I was continually getting texts from these guys. Like, dude, that was awesome. This is amazing. I was getting fired up. I was like, man, this is kind of fun. And then they got a couple of their buddies on. I was like, man, this is kind of cool. And then I started reading stuff like Naval. And, again, Tim Ferriss was like, okay, you can leverage this. You can there's no real, like, you're not trading time for money when you're doing this as much. You can start to expand your reach and what you're doing. I was like, okay. And then business-wise, I'm like, this makes way more sense. And I started doing it. I'm like, I thoroughly enjoy this aspect of it. I'm not babysitting anymore. I'm not working with people that don't want to work with me. I'm just working with people that really want to do what they're doing, and they're self-motivated because they're doing an online program. And kind of took off from there. And that, honestly, 99% of our income is through our online training app. Our gym is like, I try to keep the gym, and I mean, we have money flowing with the gym, sure, the in-person stuff, but the beautiful thing there is that it lets me train people that I want to train. Yeah. I don't have anybody in my gym that, like, I have to have there, because it's like you're not again, I have leverage. Yeah. Like, if you don't want to be here, I'm not going to babysit you. I'm not going to do any of that. If you don't fit in, that's okay. You're not the good fit, but I don't have to beg you to be here because I need you for the rent, right?
Right.
I don't need to impress you. I don't need to change anything that I do to impress you. And the weird thing there is it makes my in-person training so much better, because yeah, I don't have to compromise on any of my morals, on anything that I say, and anything that I believe, because I have that funnel of money going into everything that we're doing. So that was kind of the start of it, kind of builds up everything from there. We have a whole like website and app built out there, but I thoroughly enjoy that process of people just like eating up the program, having a little cult online and doing that. But I really believe it helps the online, or the in-person training. The online definitely helps my in-person training, and the in-person training on the back end helps my online, yeah, stuff, because I'm actually coaching and actually seeing what these programs do and result in. But I thoroughly enjoy the process of online training and working with people online. And I think a lot of times, it gave me leverage at St. Thomas. So if you're in the college world too, because it's like they would say stuff and I'm like, I'm the only one speaking up in these meetings, because nobody else can get fired. Because if they get fired, their one customer, which is the college, is gone, yeah, and they lose all of their money. It's 1-0. Like, they're playing a very, very exponential game. They either have it or they don't. And I was in these meetings and I'm like, that's wrong. And if you fire me, I already have this backup thing.
I'm good.
And they respect you so much more. And I climbed the ladder faster, yeah, there too. So I don't know. I really believe coaches having, I mean, income, just having money is so nice, because it allows you to have some sort of leverage to stand on what you need to stand on, when you need, yeah, to stand on, and people respect that way more. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword that helps you on both ways. And I think a lot of coaches get trapped there. I think that's why a lot of coaches have to feel like they're so serious, and they have to make these compromises, and they have to have these Excel sheets, because if they do lose that job, they are screwed. And I understand that you have families, man. You need to keep your mortgage paid, you know, like all these things. Yeah. That's a big part of it. But having leverage on the back end of that, so you don't have to do that, is a beautiful thing.
So what is something that you would, you know, advise a younger strength coach that's kind of looking for something in that side gig, getting into the online space? How would you recommend someone like that get going and begin that process of building that leverage, like you said?
content, man. Content's number one. Like, and content where you're at. This is the number one thing I have to see young coaches mess up on is they want to be the older coach, right? So they post like the older coach. It's like, that's not you. That's not where you're at. A lot of young coaches, they just need to train and record their training sessions and post them. And people will be, people are interested in that, man. Yeah. Like, what's this dude trying? What's this dude doing? You don't have to be different. You don't have to do anything. They just like you for you. And as you go, you can start to get into the educational stuff. You can start to get into all this stuff. But so many young coaches, man, you could get, even if it's 5 to 10 athletes online, 5 to 10 clients online, charging $50, like that's an extra $300, an extra $500 a month. That grows. That is beautiful. And the earlier you start, the faster that grows. A lot of coaches get stressed out. The young coaches that I consult with too, it's like, well, I only have 5 people. It's like, man, you're 22. Who cares, man? You're like, it's going to grow. Like, patience. Don't compromise on any of this. Just keep going. You're going to have to eat dirt for a little bit. That's okay. Nobody cares. You're 22 again. By the time you're 25, maybe we have 30 clients online, man. 30 clients online, that's $2,000 a month. You can do a lot with $2,000 a month. I'm not saying that's your only income and that's the end all be all for you, but that's an extra $2,000 a month you didn't have before. And then instead of having to like work at this gym and work with people that you don't want to do, maybe it just frees up 2 more hours of your day to put into your online. So that's the beautiful thing. Like, it starts this momentum of it frees up your day, then you can put more effort into your side gig and that grows more, and then you can free up your day more until your side gig is your main gig and it's kind of taken over. And then you're really living your own life and doing the things that you thoroughly enjoy and are interested in. And then people love people that are doing things they enjoy and are interested in. So they want to be a part of that and they want to do that. And it's kind of like this cycle of growing from there. But that would be my number one advice for young strength coaches is just start recording content of your own stuff, where you're at, what you believe in, what you think. Don't be afraid to be an idiot, man. Like, Knees Over Toes and Seedman post stuff every single day, man. Like, they're posting stuff. You can post stuff. You'll be okay. You won't look like the biggest idiot. And sometimes you will. And that's the beautiful thing about social media. It's an automatic audit, bro.
Yeah.
If you put out something stupid, people are going to tell you it's stupid. Then you learn. Okay.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I learned so much. I learned so much already. And it makes you better at weaponizing your ability to write. It makes you better at weaponizing your ability to convey what you want to convey. And then that helps your in-person training, right? So it's all kind of together. It's just leveling up yourself. That's a big thing that I focus on, especially with young strength coaches. Level up yourself. Level up your ability to communicate. Have a podcast. Not for the fact that the podcast is going to make it and become the next Joe Rogan. Maybe it does. That's beautiful. That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is you become a much better speaker and you learn from a lot of really cool guests. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you, like, I go back to my first podcast. I'm like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot, bro. And I had no ability to talk. And now I can talk for like hours on end because I've just done so many of these, you know? So I really enjoy that process of leveling yourself up. And then people want to be around other people that are at a high level, right? It's just like a video game. You want to be with the dude that's really good at the video game. Yeah. People want to be with people that are really good at life or really good at specific aspects of life. And that's controllable. You can go make yourself really good at life. Just like you can make yourself stronger, you can make yourself smarter, you can make yourself funnier, you can make yourself a better speaker, you can make yourself a better writer. And all of these things are very valuable. And I think a lot of people don't realize that it's just a rep game. Like, they don't, they're just like, oh, that guy's just a good writer. That guy's just funny. You know, it's like, no, that guy's funny because maybe when he was 5 years old, he made a joke and it was the only thing that got attention. So at 5 years old, he started ripping jokes, you know?
Yeah.
So he has reps from, he started making jokes at 5 to now he's 25. He has 20 years of making joke reps, right?
Yeah.
That's, imagine 20 years of squatting versus 1 year of squatting. Yeah. That 20 year squatter is going to be so much better than you, right? So there's so many components that I think if you treat life like a video game in these aspects, it frees you up a lot to like, oh, I can go get better at these things.
Yeah, for sure. I love that, dude. As we wrap up here, I want to ask if you have any recommendations. If you're like a book podcast guy, like, what are you reading? What are you listening to? What kind of things do you do that keep you stimulated mentally, or things that you even just enjoy to kind of consume?
Yeah, I'm a big book guy. I got like books all over my place. I've been in this geeky Nietzsche kind of like spot. And I think Thinking Fast and Slow is a really good book. I think science fiction is a good, I have so many like books that I read all the time. I think this is one of the like things when I was in my bed one time and I was scrolling through TikTok and I have a bookcase right next to my bed with all like the smartest people in the world. This is their life work next to me. And I'm scrolling on TikTok and I was like, bro, I have the smartest people in the world and their entire life works that they spent years writing from generations of humans next to me, and I'm scrolling on TikTok. Because, like, I don't bring my phone to my room anymore. Like, it's all about just, like, I need to read before bed. So I read every single day. Podcasts are another beautiful thing, man. You can listen to the smartest people in the world for free all the time, man, every single day. Yeah. And there are points in your life. This is another thing, too, that I would say is when you read, you got to digest as well. So, like, I'll go periods where I'm reading a lot. And then it'll be like, I need to go like walk and write and think and implement these ideas as well. Cause that's a big part of like when you have too much information, none of your thoughts are your own. And then it gets kind of old. Like you don't really know what to believe. And Nishi talked about this in the book too, where he's talking about when he wrote a book, he would get rid of all other books in his house. Mm. He wouldn't have a book in his house because books would influence his ideas and he felt like he was saying other people's words. And man, think about this, like books nowadays, nobody reads books because they give too little information at too slow of pace, right? That's how, like, because we can get all that information in a 5-minute video. Like that's what we think. So it's like Nietzsche was scared that books gave too much information to influence him. Now we live in a society where books give too slow of information and we're just spammed with information all over the day. So it's like at some point you need to get rid of all information and just think, okay, what are my thoughts? What do I believe in? How can I kind of piece some of this together? And I think Range is a really good book about that. So I'm going on a rant here.
Yeah.
Range is a really good book because it's talking about how a lot of best people in the world, they take two separate ideas. They take like a Nietzsche and a Harry Potter book and they make a crazy connection in the middle that nobody else has made before.
Mm, interesting.
And that is your magic right there. But you don't do that without consuming first these two things and then thinking about these two things separately to find that middle ground. And I think that's where a lot of people can find a lot of magic is get all the old information, all this information that's out there, but then spend time to make those new neurological connections that give you a different perspective that other people don't have.
I love that, dude. Dude, we crushed that.
Hell yeah.
I appreciate you stopping by and making time, man. This was really great. Why don't you plug all the stuff so people, if they're interested in following the online program or if they're around you guys locally, where can they follow you and get all your information?
Yeah, it's just Austin Yoakum on everything. If you're interested, you're interested. If not, you're not. That's okay. That's cool, too. If you think I'm an idiot, that's all right, too. I get that. I get that aspect. College me would have thought I was an idiot as well. So, yeah, it's just Austin Yoakum on all social medias.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for making time.
Thank you for having me.